Welcome to the Royals Rundown Podcast, everyone. The premier Kansas City Royals podcast presented by Royals Review. I am Jake Milham, joined by Jeremy Greco, as always. Jeremy, how are we doing this Sunday evening?
I'm the co-host of the premier Royals podcast. How could I be anything less than amazing?
You know what? That is an excellent point. And you are, like you said, you are the walking thesaurus. So I'm sure that we will have some more snappy words to plug in instead of premiere if need be. All right. Listen, we have a whole bunch of transactions to talk about and how the offseason is going to continue to go for the Kansas City Royals. But a few housekeeping things. First, if you want to keep updated on all things Kansas City Royals, you got to go visit royalsreview.com. You got news, analysis, and predictions over there. And you can find them on X and on Facebook at Royals Review. Plus, you can support the podcast further by following us on X and TikTok at Royal Rundown Pod. That is RoyalRundownPod. It feels like it's been forever since I've spelled that out, Jeremy. And wow, that is an absolute mouthful.
It's a lot of letters.
It is. It is a lot of letters.
Elon Musk was just like, hey, Twitter's too many letters. Now it's X.
One letter. I mean, that's a pretty good R. I mean, he paid how many billions of dollars for one letter, I guess? That's a pretty good ROI, if you ask me.
A lot of billions, I guess. I would almost consider it like even more than the purchase price, since the value has tanked he bought it. So it's not worth what he paid for it anymore either. I'm just saying.
Exactly. And hey, just another housekeeping thing. I am finally back at home. I am back here in Virginia. So if you hear random dog noises in the background, that is why. I currently have a black Labrador trying to munch on my thumb to get my attention. So that is going well. I am losing, unfortunately. So I'll be a nine-fingered co-host here in a little while, I think. We'll see how it goes.
You don't need fingers to podcast.
No, not really. I just need like one finger for clicking and then another finger for our haters, right?
so rude.
It was just so bad. Well, hey, some more stuff. Because I am loving the amount of folks that we're getting listening to us on Spotify, and that is the best thing for engaging with us, because you can respond to our polls and questions and answers over there on every single episode. If you respond to the Q&A, we will read your response on air in the following episode. Now, I did get a little behind in our last episode. I do apologize. So we're gonna get back on track and doing this every single episode. So on our last episode, we asked, what are you all hoping for this winter? Could be Royals related or not. And everyone just went with Royals related, Jeremy. It was pretty straightforward. Rupert said, big roster turnover. The team loses 106 games. It is time to blow up the team. Luke57 said, I'm hoping the Royals make some signings and actually try to do something, but really hope to see multiple playoff games across the parking lot. I cannot agree with you more there, Luke. It feels weird not having Chiefs football on a Sunday. We got to wait till Monday night, unfortunately. So screw my sleep schedule. And then Frank DiGiovanni, I do apologize if I mispronounced that.
DiGiovanni.
Said signing. Say that again, Jeremy.
I would pronounce that DiGiovanni.
Thank you very much. I kind of, what's the word, slurred the beginning of that together, so I apologize. He said, signing a couple of well-priced arms and at least one more bat for this lineup, and then go to Bobby with a very good offer. They are well aware of the investment in the product that funds the project. While the project could be several different things there, Frank, I can't disagree with you on your points made.
I'm thinking it's the real estate project.
Yeah, probably so. Which I will say we have spent a lot of time talking about the stadium stuff on past episodes. I understand that there is some speculation about a third site for the new Royal Stadium. I ain't gonna touch that with a 1,000-foot pole. Just gonna keep it moving.
I just want to say one real quick thing about that. And that thing is that the fact that they're looking at a third site tells me that they're not leaving Kansas City. If they can't get the deal they want in East Village, they're still looking in the general vicinity.
That's a really good point.
So don't, if you're stressing about, oh, they're going to go to Nashville, don't, I've said this before, but this is just more evidence that, like, no, they're really focused in on somewhere in this area.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeremy. I didn't even think about that. All right, but we have plenty to talk about this episode because there were a couple of really big 40-man roster deadlines this past week, and the Royals were very active. It was something that I was very happy to see. They were acquiring players. They were moving on from players. It was, Jeremy, before we go into each individual move, how were you feeling about the activity level of the Royals this past week?
So when they did the promotion day, and we, our podcast unfortunately had technical difficulties, so we both uploaded TikToks with our own individual reactions. I was not super happy. I felt like there was no sense of urgency reflected in those moves. They did what they had to and absolutely no more. But as the week has gone on, they've made a few more transactions. So I think things are looking a little bit better, but obviously this has got to be just the very bare beginning of what is to come for this team.
Yeah. And I do want to point out. So one of the listeners, I don't want to say the wrong person. So Rupert did talk about in the Q&A that he wanted to see big roster turnover. And I can't disagree with that, because you don't want all the players back from a 106 loss team unless there were crazy injuries, or you're definitely going to see progression, something like that. If you look across MLB, the Royals were more active in the past week than the average bear, if that makes sense. There were some teams who didn't non-tender a single player. There were some teams who non-tendered like 7 or 8, which is kind of what I wanted to see from the Royals. They had that much weight that they could shed.
Yeah,
but unfortunately they didn't.
I just, when I think about being aggressive, the obvious mm-hmm. target for me right now, because they're the ones that were most related to the Royals, kind of, was Atlanta. Atlanta,
yeah.
They didn't necessarily DFA a lot of guys, but they traded a lot of guys mm-hmm. that they weren't otherwise going to keep. And that's a team that had the best record in the NL last year, and a team that has World Series aspirations. And they were like, no, listen, we're going to be aggressive in making sure that we continue to win. Whereas the Royals are like, no, our guys are fine. It's fine. No need to rush. But anyway, go on.
No, and I think we're going to be talking about some of the, you know, how does this all play into free agency? How should fans expect this to move forward? We're going to talk about that later on in the episode. But let's go ahead and run through some of the major transactions from this past week. So the first trade that the Royals made was acquiring reliever Nick Anderson from the Braves for cash considerations. I was very happy to see this move. I know Anderson was not great in 2023. I mean, he appeared in 35 games, a 3.06 ERA and 36 strikeouts in like 35 innings. It's pretty good numbers. Just his availability and the injury concerns are still definitely there. MLB Trade Rumors projects he will make about $1.6 million through the arbitration process this year, but he's under club control for two more seasons. So this is the Royals giving up an unknown amount of money for a proven reliever who has done it for multiple seasons and has done it for a contending team. I think that this was a pretty savvy trade and one that will help the 2024 bullpen. Do you agree, Jeremy?
Absolutely. Even because he's been good when he's pitched. The problem, as you said, is that he's been injured quite frequently. And the Royals, they need depth. They need guys who are out there pitching. Let me rephrase. They need many guys to pitch.
Yeah.
Because all pitchers get hurt. All players get hurt, except for, you know, the rare. There's rare exceptions to the rule, but you get it. So even a guy who's not available all the time, you need a lot of guys. And part of the Royals' bullpen problems last year was that they didn't have a lot of guys. Even if we think McMillan is going to be good, MacArthur is going to be good, McMillan was hurt, missed the last chunk of the season. So you gotta have a bunch of guys. You gotta have a lot of depth. This is one of my complaints about people who point to the 2014 and 2015 Royals, is those teams were incredibly healthy. There were just hardly any injuries to speak of, and you just can't count on that happening. If they had lost, say, Lorenzo Cain in 2015 for an extended period of time, they would have had Gerard Dyson, but I don't, and to be fair, that was the best team in the American League that year. Okay, but what if they lose Lorenzo Cain in 2014? Does that team make the postseason? I don't think so. So you got to have a lot of depth is one of the things you got to have, in addition to having some high talent guys. And adding Nick Anderson adds that depth.
So yes, it does. Least. Yeah, I would. If we had to grade this, I'd give this like an A- trade.
It's cash for a guy who's you're gonna pay $1 million, and you only have to have him for a year. So if he sucks, you dump him. That's an easy A+ for me.
Hey, I like it. And like you said, Anderson is a key guy that the Royals could easily move on from if he's underperforming, or they could definitely move if he is overperforming and just the team is not doing anything by next trade deadline. So that was kind of the primer for the rest of the week's moves. The Royals and Braves had another trade in the works, and Jeremy, I want to get your thoughts first on it. So the Royals traded Jackson Kowar to Atlanta for Kyle Wright. Kowar, a former first-round pick by the Royals, former top pitching prospect in the farm system by the Royals, just could not get it done in any of his MLB appearances, and the Royals moved on in favor for starter Kyle Wright. What were you thinking about this move, Jeremy?
So from Atlanta's perspective, I think it's pretty obvious that they said, we want whatever Jackson Kowar is going to give us in this year, because Kyle Wright's not pitching in 2024. Kowar's probably a reliever even for Atlanta, but maybe they think they can fix him so far as to make him a starter. And from the Royals' perspective, what this tells me is we're not hanging on to our guys just because they're our guys. We're not just going to be, we're embarrassed because a guy that we gave up on has succeeded elsewhere. Jackson Kowar still has a ton of talent, and it was really time for the Royals to move on from him, though, because it just wasn't working in Kansas City. So the willingness to move on there and to get somebody like a Kyle Wright, who, by the way, led the National League with 21 wins, had a terrific ERA, got Cy Young votes in 2022, for 2025 is 2026. You got two seasons of him basically healthy. And again, no guaranteed money there. So if he's just not coming back from the injury, all right, well, time to let him go. And we gave up Jackson Kowar, who wasn't adding anything anyway. This is another move that is, it tells me that the Royals are being a little bit more transactional, which is what we've asked for. And it's a move that I think is really smart as far as, like, they're not going to tie themselves down to anything monetarily, but there's a lot of upside that could possibly be had there.
Yeah, I fully agree with that, Jeremy. And I think this is very much a long-term move. This is not something to address the shortfalls on the 2024 roster. And this is where I do want to get on to some Royals fans on social media, because I think that we are very much underestimating how possibly impactful this move can be. Okay, Kyle Wright was he was the best starter on a World Series contending team. And the Royals just got him for a negative WAR player in two seasons in a row. I'm sorry, that is a great, great trade for the Royals. And I get it, you're not going to see him in 2024. That's all right. Okay, right. Haha, see what I did there? He's 26 years old. Wright's 26 years old. You're going to get the best years of his career, and he's just now entering arbitration. Okay, he is going to have two more years of team control following the 2024 season. If we all wanted this team to start looking to, okay, we want to see some leaps and bounds from 2023. We wanted to see those in 2025 and 2026. That was the realistic timeline, and Kyle Wright plays into that plan. So I absolutely love this move. And Jeremy, something that I did want to point out is both Anderson and Wright are guys who very much lean on their curveball. And I wanted to point out, because James MacArthur is another pitcher who the Royals traded for last season, who relies heavily on the curveball. So we have been looking for, okay, what does this new pitching staff want? What does this new pitching development pipeline want in their players? And I think maybe a reliance upon off-speed stuff could be something to look at. Am I crazy here?
No, I think, especially when you look at a MacArthur, you see a guy that the Royals said, listen, we see what he's done. We see who he is. We think we know how to get him to where he needs to be. And they had success for a month. Will that success be extended? Well, we'll find out in 2024. But, you know, it's at least a really good start. And so I think we saw this with Cole Reagans, too, where the team really does seem to have an idea of, these are the kinds of pitchers that we can work with and help improve. And they're going out and getting them. So that's a really excellent point. And well, you were talking about the fact that he wasn't going to pitch next year and people were upset. I actually think that that's really important for what the Royals are doing. Also, I didn't quite think of this when I was mentioning this before, but it tells us that the Royals aren't going to chase every single win at the expense of the team in the long term. That was something Dayton Moore loved to do, was every single win matters. I can't get rid of Jackson Kowar for a pitcher who's not even going to pitch next year, because Jackson Kowar might help us win a game next year, would be kind of Dayton Moore's approach. So having a GM who's like, listen, no, the team is still not going to be good next year, so I've got to do something that can help the team improve. You know, if I can help the team improve in 2024, great. But if I'm not going to hurt the team in 2024 much, but I can improve it drastically in 2025 and 2026, I'm going to do that. So I think that's a really important thing to highlight as well, that we as Royals fans, with the way that MLB is set up, we're going to have to kind of accept that the team isn't going to be good, and that the GM sacrificing a win in 2024 when it doesn't matter to gain multiple wins in 2025, 2026 when it might matter is a good thing to have.
Yes, it is. So definitely we won't see the return on investment in 2024, but we do have that to look forward to in 2025. So definitely looking forward to that. I'm rounding out the moves that the Royals made last week. So they non-tendered Austin Cox, Josh Staumont, Logan Porter, and Diego Hernandez. They did not offer them contracts, making them free agents. These weren't surprising moves, unfortunately. I do want to say the Diego Hernandez one was a little bit. He's a top 15 prospect in the pipeline, but he missed a ton of time this year with a shoulder injury. Healthy. Yeah, he wasn't lights out like he was. He definitely took a big hit in his trajectory in 2023. So I imagine that he'll return to the system and reclaim what he had.
The Royals have already signed all four of those guys to minor league deals.
I do want to correct you there, because they have not re-signed Staumont.
Have they not? I read that they have. No. Maybe that was misreported.
Please go ahead and look it up while I'm talking about this. But the last report that I'm seeing is that the Royals re-signed Porter, Hernandez, and Cox to minor league deals, as well as adding Luis Sessa on a minor league deal.
Maybe I just saw the four lines and assumed But you're right. I do not see Josh Stalmont here now.
And we will, I'm curious to see how that shakes out. I don't know if he feels like he will have a better chance with another organization. But he might. Sessa is a guy that I'm not going to put a whole lot of major league expectations on. He's been in the league for a while, 8 years in the big leagues between the Yankees and the Reds. More of a middling performer. This year with Cincinnati, he didn't do a whole lot of anything good. A 9 ERA, 11 strikeouts, 12 walks in 26 innings. So he's a guy that the Royals might look to call up from AAA later on this season, but I'm not putting a whole lot of expectations on him. Are you, Jeremy?
He's a Brooks Kreske. One of those guys that they signed a bunch of veterans every year. Every team does this, signs a bunch of veterans to minor league deals for that depth. And they're like, well, maybe he'll get something back and we'll have, you know, at least we'll have a proven veteran if somebody gets hurt, when somebody gets hurt.
Let's see some more moves that the Royals made. They agreed to a contract with Josh Taylor, avoiding arbitration with him. Yeah, it was I was looking forward to your reaction on this one, Jeremy. Long story short, the lefty avoided arbitration. Price saved the Royals a little bit of money agreeing to a contract below his arbitration projection at $1.1 million. But I mean, Josh Taylor really didn't do a whole lot for the Royals in 2023. So I'm just kind of like, this is a jag move. It's just a guy.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of when they agreed to terms with Ryan O'Hearn last year. Which everyone was like, why would you do that? And then they ended up cutting him later in the season. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, we just thought maybe, but then we ended up filling that spot. So that tells me, that actually does tell me something about perhaps the direction of these Royals, because one of the things that the Ryan O'Hearn move probably should have signaled to us last offseason is that the Royals weren't looking to be particularly active in free agency. They didn't necessarily anticipate, if they're looking to be very active in free agency, then somebody like that is a guy that you go, okay, well, we're going to have to cut him to make room for the other guys that we're going to bring in. So we're just not going to tender him an offer. And when you tender a guy like Josh Taylor, you're like, well, we might not find anybody we like better than Josh Taylor, so we might as well make sure he's still here.
Right. And that's, I mean, I don't like that move and that reasoning is true, but it is. And like you said, sometimes you just need depth. At the end of the day, Taylor's a guy who has MLB experience, at least. You know what he brings.
He's also barely pitched for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another concern. And I bet you if he's just not recovering very well, that he is either just released later on down the road, or he's stashed on the 60-day IL to start the season, something along those lines.
I would not be surprised. I would put it as likely that he does not open the year with the Royals, that he maybe does. He's not even on the team in spring training. But so what concerns me isn't that he's still on the roster. What concerns me is like I said, the bit about where, well, if you're even bothering to tender him, that's because you don't think you need that roster spot, which tells me you're not going to be necessarily very aggressive.
Yeah. That's a sad but true. Hey, so speaking of Royals, go ahead.
If the Royals finish their evaluation season and say, man, we really need to improve, but then don't improve, why did we bother evaluating?
Yeah. And I'm hopeful that them moving on from Jackson Kowar was a part of that evaluation. I'm hopeful of that.
The two moves do seem to be at odds with each other in terms what is this team doing?
Yes, they definitely do. To wrap up the moves, the Royals tendered contracts to more arbitration eligible players, including righties Brady Singer, Carlos Hernandez, lefty Chris Bubich, and outfielder Edward Olivares. Now, that does not mean that they agreed to terms on a contract. Tendering contracts is just the first step in the arbitration process. They still have a little more than, like, they have like a month and a half. They have until mid-January to negotiate what their 2024 salary is going to be. Or we could just have another messy Brady Singer situation like we did this past year.
Yeah.
It can be a little interesting. We'll see how that ends up. I don't think I'm very surprised that they tendered contracts for those four players. I guess I am a little surprised, or I am hopeful that they at least tried to trade Edward Olivares, especially after adding Tyler Gentry to the 40-man roster.
Tendering Edward Olivares gives you an opportunity to trade him instead of just letting him go for nothing.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jeremy. I was getting that mixed up in my head.
Yeah.
So hopefully we hear some movement, some news on those negotiations. But are you mad about this at all, Jeremy?
No. Edward Olivares is like, again, if you were planning to be really super duper aggressive, like more aggressive than cutting Josh Taylor, you would non-tender him, and then, you know, find your way. Excuse me. But it's not a mistake to tender him, because he does seem to have some value with his bat. And look for a team that's like, man, we would like a designated hitter who we know isn't, you know, he's got a little juice, maybe not a lot of juice, but we don't have to pay him much. Or somebody who thinks they can unlock more juice in Edward Olivares, maybe. It's a deal that offering him arbitration isn't a mistake, in the same way that offering arbitration to Josh Taylor seems to have been.
Yeah. And I will, you know, I was looking through some MLB.com articles this weekend, and Mark Feinsand put out one about like the top free agents at each position and stuff like that. And he listed Jorge Soler as the top left field option. And I get that. Yeah, I know, right? If there are that many uninspiring options for power bats who can at least play, I'm not saying that they can succeed, but at least play in the outfield, then I'm sure that there is a trade market for Edward Olivares. So I think being super aggressive would be moving on from him. But like you, I'm not mad. I'm not over the moon about it. I'm not mad either. So now, with all that being said, that was a flurry of roster moves in 1 week. That was a lot. I want to make it clear that we're not going to see that many moves in one period again for quite some time. There were a few roster deadlines this past week. You also had the owners' meetings, which might have, you know, moved some things along. But the next real like thing that we're looking forward to is December 3rd through the 6th, the winter meetings in Nashville, which should be very interesting. The draft lottery is going to be held during that time. The Rule 5 draft is going to be held during that time. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of those meetings.
They did at least clear space so that they could get a Rule 5 guy or two.
Yes, that they did. And we'll see if they have... Go ahead.
Again, not as lacking aggression as last year, not as passive as last year.
Yes, there are signs at least that this front office is being a little bit more forward leaning. Are they being as aggressive as we want them to? No. Are they probably being realistically aggressive though, Jeremy? I think they are.
I guess. I believe in unrealistic aggression. Let's go get Shohei. Let's go get Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Everyone. We want everyone.
Verlander. I don't know.
Well, hey, speaking of MLB free agency, I do want to point out that one of the big dominoes fell today in Aaron Nola agreeing to a 7-year, $172 million deal going back to the Philadelphia Phillies. I do feel bad for Bob Nightingale, who gets a bad rep, rightfully so. amongst baseball fans. He had the news first, but really no one believed it until some other reporters came in behind him and confirmed it. That's a big domino to fall in the starting pitching market for this free agency, and kind of sets a decent expectation for, okay, how aggressive our team's going to be. What's the going rate for a very, very good starting pitcher? And you know what? That's a lot of money.
I did the math.
It
was like $24 million a year.
That's how it comes out too.
So he's not Verlander, not Scherzer, which we knew that, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's probably more than the Royals are thinking about paying any starting pitchers. So anybody you look at, you're like, he comps pretty well to Aaron Nola. Probably scratch him off your list, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I am hoping that is not the case. But we shall see. Sorry, Jeremy, you were breaking up there a little bit on my end. But hey, Let's go ahead and we'll keep it moving here. So all that put together, we'll probably see some odds and ends moves here and there. But for the time being, Jeremy, you had a really good piece come out on Saturday titled "Championships Cannot Be Acquired Through Free Agency Alone." And I will say I was learning a little bit more about this, at least in the NFL realm. And I want to say that many of the points you made reflect that. And yeah. I want you to kind of just give a little synopsis of your piece, and then I wanted to talk about it with you. How's that sound?
Sounds good. So basically, I like how you called this really good, and I'm looking at it going, man, I lost my sense of direction somewhere in there. I had a few different directions I was thinking about going with it, and I think I tried to go in too many of them at once, and it didn't quite work the way I wanted to. The basic idea I started with was that the Royals under Dayton Moore tried to reach the playoffs without ever using free agency, and that really didn't work. Even in 2015, when they were the best team, they did use free agency. Edinson Volquez, Kendrys Morales, among others. And then the Mets tried to use free agency solely kind of to reach the playoffs this year. And even they didn't necessarily sign a lot of free agents, but they did retain a couple of guys in Brandon Nimmo and Edwin Diaz who had reached free agency but were Mets prior to that, but they handed out a lot of money this past offseason. Actually, this past offseason was the most free agent spending ever in Major League history. So that was interesting, but the Mets were a big part of that. And then they ended up, you know, playing under 500 for the year. And so I kind of was like, well, why did the Mets fail when everyone saw them spending all this money and saw all these great free agents? And they already had guys like Francisco Lindor and Murphy, I think. Not Daniel Murphy. Jeff McNeil. I don't know. They had a decent second baseman. Pete Alonso at first. So they had a bunch of guys that could really play. And they added some big-name free agents, and they just didn't go anywhere. And I wonder, what does this mean? What I realized, and this is, I guess, what I kind of started to like lose the focus on my article, was I realized that really the problem with free agency is that by the time players reach free agency, they're usually past their primes. And it makes it difficult to win through free agency because you can go get a Justin Verlander, but oops, he's a little bit older now and he's hurt. Or you can go get a Max Scherzer. Oops, he's a little bit older now. He's not as good as he was. But because there are so few free agents, and because the really talented ones are so rare, you've got to really pay out the nose to bring them in. And it just doesn't seem to work out. So you really, I've advocated in the past that the Royals should just really go out there and just spend a lot of free agent money. Let's go buy a championship. I think that would be more fun than watching them lose 106 games. But I realized that you probably can't do that under the current system. And a lot of people took away from that I was saying the Royals shouldn't get any free agents and sign any free agents. And that's not what I'm arguing at all. What I really wanted to point out was just like the free agent system is broken to the point where like you have to develop some internal talent to be good and then fill in the gaps with free agents. And I'm not sure that that's actually good for the sport of baseball. I think if we had, and this is going to sound like very pro player, but I think that the rookie deals, the team control should be smaller by a year or two, maybe even just because I think it would be better for the sport if there was more free agency. And that sounds like, oh, well, you just want guys to get paid a whole ton of money. But I think if there were more free agents, we would actually see the cost of those free agents go down, because now Justin Verlander wouldn't be the only pitcher worth signing on the free agent market last year. It'd be a bunch of guys. And maybe you don't got to overpay for the guy that the Royals got that I don't like, the innings eater. I've forgotten his name suddenly. I'm just gonna move on, I guess. Did you type it to me? You typed it to me. Cool. Talk for 2 minutes. I'm talking for 2 minutes. Cool. Right. So that guy that I can't stand, they sign him. Maybe if there's more free agents, you can get a guy who's a little bit better for that same amount of money, just because there's more people to sign. And so really, I think what we're kind of talking about is supply and demand here, because there's a demand for a certain number of players. But if the supply is greater, then you don't have to pay any of them as much. So maybe free agency would work out better for the teams than it currently does. And that would be of a benefit to everyone. And I do wonder, some guys are going to get more money because they're going to reach free agency sooner, but I feel like maybe the superstars would actually get less money, which wouldn't be awful for the sport. I think the more you spread out the money among the players, the better it is for the health of the sport. Like, I don't think it's necessarily ideal that Justin Verlander gets $41 million and then the next tier drops all the way to 27. If they were both making 30, that I think might be better for the sport of baseball. But obviously we're not going to see that anytime soon. So we just kind of got to live with the system we've got, I guess, which means that the Royals absolutely are going to have to figure out drafting and developing, because they're just not going to be able to sign all these free agents. And the trading the trading has value, but again, you have to have something to trade.
Yep. And you have to have, in a sense, expendable talent to be able to trade it and still have a competent team. So my biggest question coming out of this article was your last header, which was, so what about the Royals? Like, how does this system affect the 2023 Royals? And I think that you surmised it really well. You have to maximize opportunities for improving your roster in other ways by sending veterans away for young potential and looking for reclamation projects, which I think one of the great, the Royals traded for two great examples of that. They got Nick Anderson, a proven guy who needed an opportunity to flourish, and Kyle Wright, who just needs a year of recovery, and you see what you got in him there. So it is, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how aggressive the dollars are spent by the Kansas City Royals this free agency. But everyone out there, please go check out this article. Jeremy is dogging on himself. It still makes a lot of good points, and it comes across clearly for me, at least. you can check out that linked in the episode description below. But Jeremy, great work as always, and I love it. I love reading your weekend columns. But for right now, how about we move on to some Royals reviews? How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
Alrighty, well, hey, so Jeremy, do you mind starting us off?
No, I'll go ahead and start us off. So I have been watching a new anime while I work out. I like to watch anime that I can only get subbed while I work out, because that's just how it works best with my neurodivergent brain. And so I picked up Wotokoi Love is Hard for Otaku on Amazon Prime Video. And that is, as you might imagine, kind of a rom-com, kind of slice of life, goofy anime about four people who are all otaku, which, if you're not familiar with the term, it basically is the Japanese term for people who love video games or anime, especially if they're adults. So these are adults that all work at some kind of boring office job, and they all have a love of these things. One of them loves fanfic. One of them loves cosplay. One of them loves video games, and one of them loves manga, which is basically Japanese comic books. So it's just their interactions. Two men and two women, and they're dating each other. The one man is dating one woman, when the other man is dating the other woman. And they just kind of, it just follows them as they just kind of hang out and live their lives and do their otaku things, which is kind of fun when you are a nerd yourself and you recognize a lot of those behaviors and traits. So it makes me laugh out loud on a regular basis, which is actually pretty hard to do for a TV show, movie, book. I laugh out loud at people constantly, but at media, I just kind of am amused internally and don't laugh out loud. But this one makes me laugh out loud because it's so funny. So that will be my Royals review this week. And just to make sure you all heard the name, it is Wotokoi Love is Hard for Otaku.
All righty, Jeremy, thank you very much for the review. I love hearing about these slice of life, animes that you watch, because it's definitely outside of my normal viewing, so I will say that. What I am going to review, I have quite a few things that I want to review this week, I will say that, but I am only going to pick one, and it's all thanks to my wife. So she recently went on a trip out to California, and she came back with a few records for me. And one of the records that she got for me was Tyler Childers' Rustin' in the Rain. And that is a Americana, you know, if you're not into that genre, that's okay. Kind of on the fringes of country, but Tyler Childers is just a great lyricist, and I really enjoy his voice. I'm sorry, honey, what did you call it?
Americana or Southern Craft.
Southern Craft.
That mix between rock and roll and country.
Mm-hmm. So I very much enjoy the music, but she got me the vinyl for it, and it's absolutely beautiful. It is this, I wouldn't expect it. It's not the normal black. It's kind of a opaque green with some like yellow marbling in it. It's an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous piece of vinyl, and I think it just adds to the character that comes out in his music. So if you just want to stream some music, highly suggest going and checking out Tyler Childers in general. But his new album, Rustin' in the Rain, is very, very good. It was up for some awards recently with the CMAs. So definitely worth your time, if you ask me. Jeremy, before we get on out of here, I do want to double check with you. Where can folks find your work at? Where are you at nowadays?
So I'm pretty much just on Twitter and Royals Review. Pretty much everything else is taking a back burner, at least for the time being. If I go back to any of those things, I have a Blue Sky account. I just can't bring myself to use it for the reasons we've discussed before, where I already have a community built up on Twitter. So I anticipate I'll eventually move there, but I'm dragging my feet as long as possible. But if anything changes about where you can find me, I will definitely, you all will be the first to know.
I love it, Jeremy. I love it. Hey, either way, you can find our thoughts on anything Royals related on the Royals Rundown podcast accounts on Twitter and on TikTok. Plus, you can find our written thoughts most of the time at royalsreview.com. For me personally, my personal Twitter has kind of taken a back burner. I am posting a lot more on Threads. I know folks will say what they want about it. But there is a very hearty NFL kind of community over there as of right now. So I have been enjoying engaging in that and growing my following there a little bit. So please go check me out over there at Jacob Milham Sports if you would like to. I always follow back. We gotta grow that community a little bit more. But hey, the best things that you could follow for anything Kansas City Royals related, Royals Review, you can follow them on X, you can follow them on Facebook, or you can just find everything, a one-stop shop at royalsreview.com. Jeremy, do you have anything else before we get on out of here?
No.
Rude noises, rude comments, nothing?
Not today.
Wow, wow.
Those have got to be safe for special occasions, Jacob.
Fair enough. You got me there. Well, hey, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here and enjoy our Sunday evening. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for supporting us. One last time, go check us out on Spotify and answer our Q&As, and we will respond to them on the next episode. Thank you all for your support, however you show it. And until next time, go Royals!